Turn to the book of Acts, chapter 27. Just going to read one verse. We'll refer to many in this chapter, but just read one verse, verse 25. "Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God, that it shall be even as it was told me." In this 27th chapter, we have the account of Paul's journey to Rome. By way of background, back in Acts chapter 21, Paul was arrested. He would stand trial before the Jews in Acts 22, before the Sanhedrin in Acts chapter 23. Stood before Felix two times, and we read of those in Acts chapter 24. He then stood before Festus. We read of that in Acts chapter 25. And he stood before Agrippa, and we read of that in Acts chapter 26. He is then sent to Rome, the capital city of the Roman Empire. The reason is because he appealed to the Roman Emperor, Caesar. Here in Acts 27, Paul is on a prison ship along with 275 others. We see from verse 37 that there were 276 on board. So 275 others besides Paul was on this ship. It would be a journey of approximately 2,100 miles. And this chapter gives us the details of that journey. Luke, who is the author of Acts, describes the journey to Rome. In this account, there are many valuable lessons. There are valuable lessons about life in general. We learn from this that life consists of a great variety, that life consists of change that can occur at any moment. We see, in regards to that, we see that there were times of favor, there were times of refreshment. In Acts 27 and verse 3, Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. So there was a time of refreshment. And in life, of course, there are times of refreshment. We see in verse 4 that they ran against some contrary winds, but they found shelter. And there are times where we find shelter. We see in verse 7, "And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Sindus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete, over against Salmone." So we see there were times when it was very slow moving. Very slow moving. They would have liked to go faster, but there were times it was just very slow moving. We see there were times when their intentions were hindered. We see that again in verse 7. We see that there was a time when they came to an enjoyable haven there in verse 8. Verse 9, we see that there were some dangerous times as well. "Now when much time was spent," that is in the havens, "and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already, Paul admonished them." So there came a time when it was dangerous. And then we see in verse 13 that when the south wind blew softly. So there were times when it was just smooth sailing. But there were also times of fierce storm in verse 14, but not long after. That is, not long after the gentle blowing south winds, there arose suddenly. A tempestuous, a violent, and turbulent wind called Euroclydon, which would be a typhoon-like wind, a whirlwind, a hurricane. So there are lessons concerning the variety of life. There are also valuable lessons concerning the providence of God. Providence of God is a wonderful thing. It's something that God's people ought to often consider. Something when we look back on our life, we can see very clearly the providence of God. By the providence of God, we simply mean God working all things according to the counsel of His will for the good of His people. The providence of God. We see the providence of God here in Acts chapter 27. It was by the providence of God, in verse 1, that Paul and certain other prisoners were committed to the charge of one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. It was no accident that Julius was put in charge of these prisoners. This was the providence of God. This God-placed man would later keep the soldiers from killing the prisoners for the sake of Paul, because he wanted to save the life of Paul. Notice verse 42 and verse 43. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, Julius, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose. So what a blessing that God put Julius on that ship. That was the providence of God. No one knew why. Why was Julius put in charge of the prisoners? Why him? Why this particular centurion was on this ship? For this very reason, to save the life of the prisoners. God, of course, sees ahead. He knows what's coming, and He has all things in place. God doesn't rush to put things in place as events happen. God puts things in place long before events happen. And that's the providence of God. By the providence of God, there was a man by the name of Aristarchus there in verse 2. He later is referred to by Paul in Colossians 4 and verse 10 as my fellow prisoner. And in Philemon, verse 24, as my fellow soldier. So it seems to me that this man was a blessing to Paul. And God put them both on the same ship. Then we see, by the providence of God, on the second day of their journey, verse 3, they arrived in Sidon. And we read that Julius, there he is again, courteously entreated Paul. Paul's a prisoner. Julius is courteous toward him. God had put him there and gave him liberty to go to his friends on the ship to refresh himself, to have fellowship and encouragement. Again, this is the providence of God. Then in verse 4, we read that because of contrary winds, their course was diverted. And it was God who brought the contrary winds, causing the ship to change course. And we read in verse 5 that they arrive in Myra, a city of Lycia. And it was here that Julius, there he is again, discovered a ship going to Italy. And he transferred the passengers from the ship they were on to this other ship. Obviously, it was a bigger ship. Obviously, it was a better ship. Why make the change if it wasn't better? This was the providence of God. God knew that in a very short while, they would be in a storm and they're going to need a better ship. So God, in His providence, diverts their ship. And Julius finds out there's another ship. Hey, we'll take that ship. The providence of God. I feel sorry for anyone, any child of God who cannot see God's hand. Look at our lives, and God's hand is everywhere. And that encourages faith. So God was arranging here everything for a future storm. There's also some instruction not only about life and about the providence of God, but there's some instruction here on how to survive the storms of life. What got Paul on this ship to begin with was he was willing to follow God at any cost. Acts chapter 20, verses 22 through verse 24. And if we're going to survive storms, it must be our intent, it must be our resolve. I'm going to serve God at all cost. Whatever it costs me, I am going to serve the Lord. That must be our attitude. We see as we read on in Acts 27, during the storm, there was a time in verse 15, and when the ship was caught or held and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. In other words, we let go. We let go. There wasn't anything we could do. No matter how hard we tried to control that ship, we couldn't do it. So we just let go. And sometimes that's what we need to do in the storm. We need to let go. And so there was a letting go. There was also inventory taken on three different occasions. And things were thrown overboard. In verse 18, "And we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest, the next day they lightened the ship." They obviously looked around and said, "Well, we're not going to need this, and we're not going to need this, and we'll just get rid of it." They took inventory. Now notice verse 19. "And the third day, we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship." Twice now they've taken inventory. And twice they've thrown overboard that which they did not need. In verse 34, we see also, I got a wrong verse there, but again, three times they took inventory and cast things overboard. When we're in a storm, we had better learn to take inventory of ourselves. As you're in a storm, you sure do not need to be dragging that which is not needed along with you. There was the presence of God, verse 23. I should say there was the recognized presence of God. "For there stood by me this night the angel of God." There stood by me. He felt the presence of the Lord. "There stood by me this night." That is, God was a present help to him. You're in a storm, you need a present help. You don't need help down the road, you need it right now. And God is a very present help in trouble. We also see in verse 23 that Paul never lost sight of who he was. Whose I am. Whose I am. In the storm, don't ever forget who you belong to. Don't forget also your purpose in life. He goes on to say, "Whom I serve." He kept everything in perspective. I belong to Him and I serve Him. No matter what comes of this storm, I'm His and I'm here to serve Him. We must keep everything in perspective. People have a tendency to lose perspective in time of storm. Paul maintained fellowship with God. This messenger of God that appeared to him, notice verse 24, saying, spoke to him. He heard the voice. There were many voices on that ship that night. I'm sure there was plenty of cursing that night on that ship. There were all kinds of voices on that ship. But Paul heard the Lord. That'll get you through the storm. Because in a storm, I guarantee you, there's all kinds of voices. But what the voice you need to hear is the voice of the Lord. We see also that Paul believed God. There in verse 25, the verse that we read for our text. Down in verse 29, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. They used the God-provided anchors. God gives us many anchors. We need to use them. We need to use them because that'll keep us from drifting. And then in verse 31, we see that there was a stain in the place where God had promised to keep them. Paul told them in verse 31, except these, they were about to jump overboard. And Paul said, except you abide in the ship, you cannot be saved. Except you stay with the ship, you will die. You stay where God has put you in the time of storm. But we want to look tonight at verse 25. And the subject of the message is the calming influence of faith. Paul says here in verse 25, be of good cheer, for I believe God, that it shall be even as it was told me. That is a personal declaration of faith. Consider the circumstances under which those words were spoken. In verses 9 through verse 12, we'll not read those verses to save time, but in verses 9 through 12, Paul warns and admonishes the sailors not to proceed with the journey, but rather to stay in the fair heavens until the hurricane season had ended. He told them that if you continue on, the ship will suffer much damage, and that lives would be put in peril. Paul's message was rejected in favor of the opinions of those on that ship. Notice in verse 11, nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. And in verse 12, the more part advised to depart. The majority was saying, we've got to leave, we've got to go now. And they rejected the message of Paul. Paul's message was rejected in favor of the opinions of man. Why? Because they had plans of their own. They had their own agenda. We see if by any means they might attain to Phoenicia. We've got to get to Phoenicia. We don't have time to waste. In other words, they had plans. And nothing was going to get in the way of the plans. There's a warning here. Many a storm, you realize they would have never had to go through that storm had they listened to Paul. Paul later tells them that. He later stands up and tells them, if you would listen to me, you wouldn't be in this mess. But they didn't have to be in that storm. Many storms that we go through is because we rejected the message of the Lord. But then notice verse 13, and we've seen this happen many times. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence. So the majority of people rejected the message of Paul, were leaving, and as they head out, again, keep in mind, Paul is saying, you've got to wait till the hurricane season's over, and as they head out, it's just a smooth sailing. And they're all thinking, Paul, you're a fool. You see how well this is working? This is working well. But then we come to verse 14. But not long after. Always keep in mind, any time the message of God is rejected, there's coming and not long after. It's coming. And if the message has been rejected, you will not be ready. And not long after. And we see it was a time of storm and great danger. But not long after, there arose against it a force of opposition, a tempestuous, a violent and turbulent wind called Euroclydon. We read in verse 15 that the ship was caught. It was intercepted by the wind and carried by the force of the wind. And we read as a result that it could not bear up into the wind. So it was a time of fierce and threatening storm. This is when Paul stood and said, I believe God. It was in a time of great storm. From verse 16, we see that the boat was carried to the island of Clauda, where they had to repair the damage that was done to the boat. So it was a time of damage when Paul spoke in verse 25. We also see that they could not stay in Clauda because of the danger of the quicksands in verse 17. So it was a time of one danger after another danger. When they escaped one danger, there was another one. When they escaped one problem, there was another one. And it just kept on going. That's the storm. That's the circumstances in which they were in. Continuing on in their journey, we read in verse 18, we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest. That is, all seemed to be out of control. That ship was just being tossed. And then we see again in verse 18, the next day they lightened the ship. In other words, they're being tossed, things seem out of control, and the next day, guess what? Things aren't getting any better. It's just as bad, if not worse, the next day. So it was a time of danger. It was a time when everything seemed to be out of control. There was loss. And then we see later on it says that we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. That is, there was more loss. There was loss and then there was more loss. And these are the circumstances under which Paul speaks. In verse 20, and when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared. It was a time of no direction. It went by the stars for their direction. They had no direction. And it was dark. It was dark. And then it says, and no small tempest lay on us. That is, it was a time of great weariness. These are the circumstances under which Paul speaks. We see also all hope that we should be saved in verse 20 was then taken away. It was a time when hope in the temporal was removed. Completely removed. Completely taken away. And then we read in verse 27, but when the 14th night was come, 2 weeks is a long time to be in a storm. This was a prolonged storm. The conditions that they were in were long. They were ongoing. They were continuous. Day after day. Night after night. They appeared to be completely under the control of the storm. And it says, as we were driven up and down in Adria, Imagine the discomfort of being up and down with the waves. So it was a time of discomfort. It was a time of great fear. Verse 30, it was a time of great distress, and the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship. The shipmen were about to flee out of the ship. It was a time of great distress. So under these extreme circumstances of difficulty, under these extreme circumstances of problems and threats and dangers and challenges and struggles and uncertainties and impossibilities, we read in verse 21, but after long abstinence, Paul stood forth. I like those two words, stood forth. Paul stood forth in the midst of them, so all could see him, and so all could hear what he has to say. Paul stood forth in the midst of them. And then we get down to verse 25, and what was one of the things he said? I believe God. I believe God. In the midst of a storm, he declared his faith. So let's look at this personal declaration of Paul. First of all, it was a personal statement. I believe God. No matter what anyone else on that ship believed, Paul said, I believe God. No one can believe for another. No one can believe for you. You can only believe for yourself. And it is one thing to declare as an assembly our belief, our statement of faith. But it is something entirely different to be able to personally say, I believe. I believe. In God. We must examine and ask ourselves, can we say personally and individually, I believe God. I believe God. So this is a personal declaration. It is a statement of faith. In the very midst of adverse circumstances, Paul said, I believe. That is, I am convinced, I trust, I have confidence, and I have regard. Now, to believe must have an object. You can't just say, I believe. Well, what do you believe? Belief must have an object. And when Paul stood forth in the midst of them, he declared a twofold object of belief. First off, he said, I believe God. That's first. I believe God. Since God cannot be seen with the physical eye, to believe God is an act of faith. We that are saved are to live our lives by faith. The just shall live by faith. Romans chapter 3. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7, for we walk by faith and not by sight. To walk is our habitual way of living. To walk by faith rather than sight means that we are more under the sway and influence of God than we are what can be seen with the physical eye. On that ship and in that storm, Paul was more influenced by God than the circumstances that he was in. Paul was more influenced by God than he was everyone on that ship. There they were in great peril. And when Paul said, "I believe God," he is saying God is real. More real than the peril that we are in. I believe God. You know, many times when someone asks us, "Well, what do you think about such and such?" we ought to say, "I believe God," and then give what God would say. What God would say. When Paul said, "I believe God," this was not blindness speaking. He was aware of the storm. This was not ignorance. This was not foolishness. To say, "I believe God," is a statement based upon knowledge. A knowledge of God. He said in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 12, "I know whom I have believed." I know whom I have believed. So when Paul said, "I believe God," there was a statement saying, "I know God." He went on in 2 Timothy 1 in verse 12. And he said, "I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that He is able." So when Paul said, "I believe God," he was saying, "I am persuaded by God." But also in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 12, "I know whom I have believed and persuaded that He is able to keep that which I have committed unto Him." To say, "I believe God," is a statement of commitment to the Lord. So this statement, "I believe God," says a lot. It says that he knew God. It says that he was persuaded in God. It says that he was committed to God. When Paul said, "I believe God," he's not just saying, "I believe that there is a God." That's not what he's saying. He's not merely saying, "I believe in the existence of God." He is saying, "I believe in the person and character of God. And I base that upon a knowledge of the Lord. And I have a knowledge and I have a confidence and I have an assurance and a dependence and an unreserved trust in the majesty of His person. I believe God." It is a knowledge, a confidence, an assurance, a dependence, a trust in the sovereignty of God. In the government of God, that He governs over all, that His throne is established, that His throne is fixed. He said, "I believe God. I believe God's in control of this storm." It is a knowledge, a confidence, an assurance, a dependence, an unreserved trust that God is almighty, that none can defeat His counsels, none can thwart His purposes, none can overthrow His will. There is nothing beyond the dominion and the control of God. I believe God. That is quite a statement. I believe who God is. I believe that God is gracious. I believe He's merciful, loving, and faithful. I believe God, is what Paul is saying. But notice, this is a twofold declaration. Number one, I believe God. That must be first. And then secondly, that it shall be even as it was told me. What was told him is recorded in verse 24. Verse 23, "For there stood by me this night the angel," or the messenger of God, "whose I am, and whom I serve," saying, here's what this message of God said: "Fear not, Paul. Thou must be brought before Caesar. And lo, God hath given these all them that sail with thee. Paul, no one's going to die. No one's going to die. And Paul stands up and he said, I believe God. Here we are in the midst of a storm. Here we are in great peril. And Paul says, I believe that it'll be even as. Two very important words, even as. Exactly and precisely as it was told me. I believe God. And I believe God's word. Paul was absolutely confident and certain that God was in control. If God isn't in control, then you cannot have the assurance that God is going to fulfill His word. I mean, if He's not in control of all things, you can't have that assurance. So you must first believe God. In believing God, we now have the foundation on which we can believe what God has said. I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. Remember Abraham in Romans 4 verse 20, staggered not at the promise of God. That's what we see here. In Paul, we can believe what God says. Why? Because of who He is. Well, what about this fellow over here? He says this. Don't matter. I believe God. And it shall be even as it was told me. God is true. The Bible says in Titus 1 and verse 2 that God cannot lie. God cannot lie. It is an impossibility for God to lie. God cannot be mistaken. He cannot be deceived. In fact, God is so true that anything contrary to Him is a lie. Romans 3 verse 4, let God be true and every man a liar. If it's contrary to God, it's a lie. Plain and simple. What God says, you can depend upon. You can depend on it. But you won't unless you believe God. You can be certain of everything God says. You can trust it. You can lean upon it. You can rest upon it. You can cleave to it. Even when everything seems to be contrary. I mean, here's a fierce storm, and it appears that everyone in that ship is going to die. But Paul stands up and says, be of good cheer. In other words, be of good courage. I believe God, even as it was told me. It shall be even as it was told me. And God told me that none of us are going to die. So in spite of what it looks like, I believe God. But Paul, don't you see that we've sustained some damage over here on the ship? I believe God. Paul, don't you see how high these waves are? Don't you see how strong this wind is? Don't you see that it seems like we're in the control of this storm? And Paul says, none of that matters. Because I believe God. God said that we will not die. And I believe Him. In other words, we don't have to take matters into our own hands. God is big enough. And I believe God. We ought to be certain that God will carry out. God will execute. God will bring about. God will accomplish. God will achieve. And God will implement whatever it is that He has promised, whatever it is that He has said. So we ought to be able to stand forth in the midst of the storm and say with Paul, I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. So Paul, under extremely adverse circumstances, stood forth and boldly declared a twofold belief. In spite of everything that was going on, and here we are, living in a world under the dominion of Satan, living in a world that is the very embodiment of Satan's spirit, surrounded and constantly bombarded with satanic philosophies and satanic reasonings and the very ideas of Satan. But can we stand forth in the midst of it all and boldly say, I believe God, and I believe it'll be even as He said it would be. I believe God. You and I live in a world that is in the very sphere of rebellion and opposition against God. There are opposing forces, satanic forces everywhere. Satanic barriers. Satanic obstacles. We live in a world that does not honor God. And that's becoming more and more prevalent each day. Does not honor God, does not admire God, does not seek God, does not trust God, and does not fear God. In fact, it's becoming more and more common to just deny God altogether. And there are many, many of God's people who are afraid. They're fearful. But what we need is to stand up and say, I believe God. And I believe it's going to be exactly as He said it would be. I believe God. Oh, to be able to say that with Paul. But then notice lastly the effect of such a faith. On that ship were those gripped with terror. And Paul stood in the midst of them, not as one gripped with fear, but he very calmly, ships being tossed, he very calmly says, I exhort you, be of good cheer. Every time Christ used those words, He used them in Matthew 9, verse 2, Matthew 14, verse 27, and John 16, verse 33. He always spoke those words to individuals who were troubled, to individuals that were fearful and anxious and unsettled, and who were in very distressing situations. It is no different here. Paul is speaking to those who are very troubled, very fearful. And he speaks as a man who is not under the control of the circumstances. He was calm. He had an inward peace. And he had an inward joy. And he was able to keep everything in proper perspective. Why was that? I believe God. I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. So the effect that this had upon Paul, it was a calming effect upon Paul. But notice, verse 30, Paul's faith had a calming effect upon the unbelievers. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea under color, as though they would have cast anchors out of the ship, out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved. Verse 33, and while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, this day is the 14th. So he kept them from jumping ship. This is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore, I pray you, take some meat, for this is for your health, and there shall not a hair fall from the head of any one of you. And they took bread and they gave thanks. There's a picture there of calmness now. And it's all because of Paul. It's all because of Paul. You see, something is wrong when a child of God can walk into a distressful situation where others are distressed and add to the stress. Something's wrong with that picture. But a child of God should be able to walk into such with faith and say, listen, folks, I believe God. I know this is a bad situation, but I believe God. And there ought to be a calming, effect upon others. Watch sometime at a visitation for a funeral. Everything is calm for a while. Then someone walks in. Here it goes. Here it goes. Everything just falls all to pieces. Is that how it should be? Is that the influence that we want to have? No, we want to have a calming effect where people can sense there's a person that believes God. There's a person that believes God. And it ought to calm them. He said in verse 36, notice verse 36, then were they all of good cheer. They didn't believe. Not all of them. Some of them did. Luke was on that ship. Some other saints. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. Oh, how we need to be able to stand forth in the midst of everything and say both with our lips and our life, I believe God, and it shall be even as it was told me, or it shall be even as He said. I believe God. I believe God. Can we say that tonight? Can we stand in the midst of the storm? Again, it's important that we realize the circumstances under which these words were spoken. You know, it's easy. People can tell others to believe in God, and then when calamity comes to their life, they're the worst. They're the first to tell others, oh, you just need to be, you know, trust the Lord. When it comes to them, it's completely different. It's as if God vacated the throne. But all we need to stand up and say, I believe God. We need to stand up in the midst of the ungodly. When people are spewing their venom, their blasphemy, we need to stand up and say, listen, I believe God. Well, that'll get you killed. It might. But that's our duty. I believe God. I don't care where we are. It could be a barbershop. It could be anywhere. A filthy mouth, and you just need to say, listen, I believe God. I believe the Lord. We need to be courageous enough to stand up and declare to anyone who will listen, and even those who won't listen, I believe God. And I believe what this book says. It comes to the sins of our day. Homosexuality, people need to just stand forth and say, listen, I believe God, and here's what He says. Now, you can believe what you want, but this is what it says. And I believe God. We need to let folks know what side of the fence we're on. I believe God. God help us to have this faith. It is a calming. It is a calming faith. It'll calm us, and it will calm others as well. It may also enrage others. But we need this kind of faith. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us to verse song.